Well, welcome to the Shiur of the Nezer Parshas Korach. There's a very important and very unique, controversial Ibn Ezra at the very, very beginning of the Parshas Korach. Ibn Ezra writes that Zeh HaDavar Hayah B'Midbar Sinai. The rebellion of Korach took place not right after the episode with the Meraglim, which is what you would think, just going through the Chumash chronologically, but the episode of Korach, the rebellion of Korach, took place way back when the Jews were still at Midbar Sinai. Kasher nishalfu ha-becharim v'nivdalu ha-leviim. When the becharim, the firstborn, were removed from their position as being the kohanim, the spiritual leaders of the Jewish people, and the leviim instead were picked to step into that role. We know that prior to the Maaseh Ha'egel, prior to the episode of the Golden Calf, the Bukharim, the firstborn, were the ones who were serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. They were the ones who had that special quality of being God's servants, so to speak. In the aftermath of the Ego, where it seems that the Bukharim certainly did not, you know, protest against the Ego, and the Bukharim may have taken the lead in actually offering up sacrifices to the Ego, as the Ibn Ezra is going to suggest in a little bit. So we know that the Bukharim were removed from power, so to speak. The Levim were put into place. It was at that time that the rebellion of Korach took place as a reaction to that change. The Jewish people were suspicious of the motivations of Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu picked the Levim to substitute for the Bukharim because he said, Hashem Eli. He said, who's going to stick up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the B'nai Levi came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Kali Yisrael didn't look at it that way, says the Ibn Ezra. They saw something that struck them as being nepotistic, that Moshe Rabbeinu was favoring his own Shevet. He was taking the opportunity of this tragedy of the Chet HaEgel to suddenly put his own Shevet into place, and Korach's rebellion is all a reaction to that. God was made Kehos, Shane Krovin they love, and even within the B'nai Levi, the family of Kehos was given special treatment, call yourself up, because that was the family from which Moshe Rabbeinu came. L'chol B'nai Levi Shane Mishpachto. Ba'levim Choshu Alof, Ba'avur Hayosom Nisunim La'aron Levanov. So you'll say, okay, so that explains perhaps why the Bukharim would have been angry, but it seems like in the rebellion of Korach, that the B'nai Levi specifically played an important role in the rebellion. Right? Rab Lachem B'nai Levi. B'nai Levi already have enough. Right? So the B'nai Levi also objected to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Right? So you think they'd be the happiest. They were the ones who were able now to replace the Bukharim. Yeah. But on the other hand, the B'nai Levi was subjugated to the Kohanim. So the whole change of the social order that took place after the Chet HaEgel got the Bukharim upset. It got the Levim upset. And Korach's rebellion is a response to all of this. To catch their Dothan Vaviram, so how do you understand Dothan Vaviram and their role in all of this, as the Ibn Ezra? Vavur Shehesir HaBukharim Meruvein Aviyam, when the son of Yosef, Dothan Vaviram were from Shevet Ruvein, so they were also complaining about a transfer of power from the Bukharim, but not they themselves as Bukharim, but rather from their whole Shevet. They felt that as Shevet Reuven, they really should have been the Bukharim. And Yaakov Avinu had already gone and transferred the Bukharim from Reuven to Yosef, so Dothan and Aviram were reflecting, I guess what you'd call, pent-up aggressions that had been simmering for generations. So, you know, once we're having a rebellion about the change in the social order, everybody comes out, you know, everybody comes out of the woodwork once there's a change. Ulai Hashdu Bavur Yoshua Mishnoisa, and says the Ibn Ezra, perhaps the reaction of Dothan Aviram to say that, hey wait, the B'nai Reuven used to be the Bukharim, you know, Reuven used to be the Bukharim, now it's given over to Yosef, right? You know, how does that happen? Maybe they attributed that not to Yaakov Avinu, but rather to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu transfer power to Yosef? Well, Yoshua is second in command, was from Ephraim. So, you know, they suspected Moshe Rabbeinu of also, you know, stacking the deck in favor of Yehoshua. Gam Korach Zechor Haya Kichen Kosuf V'Degel Ruvein Chon of the Negev V'Korach the Negev HaMishkan Ki Ruvein B'nei Kehos. By the way, Korach, says the Ibn Ezra, was himself a Bukhar. In other words, if you look back in Parshas Vayera, where it lists off the genealogy of the Levim, they're Korach, we're told as the Bukhar. So Korach is participating in this rebellion from two perspectives. Korach is upset that he's merely a Levi and not granted the special privileges that are granted Kohanim or the like. And he's also sticking up on behalf of the Bukharim. So, plus, you see, when you look at the way the Machanos were set up, was that Korach's tent was rather close to the Machane Reuven, so it's not, not hard to understand that Korach would have made common cause with the Bnei Reuven, Dosan Naviram, in rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu. The Eul Nesiei Ha'eda Hayu B'chorim, right, and the Nesiei Ha'eda, the princes of the congregation who were referred to in Pasuk Beis, right? The Chamisha Mamasayim Nish, Nesiei Eidah, Kriyei Moed, Am Sheshem. What does it mean that they were Nesiei Eidah? It says they did it. It means that they were Bechorim, they were firstborn. And he writes, Vehem Hayu Makrivim Et Ha'olos, and they were the very ones who had offered up the Karbonos to the Ego. Right? So if you look back in Parshas Kisifa, it says that they built a Mizbeach before the Egel Azav. They offered up Karbonos. Who was offering up these Karbonos? Mishtama, says the Ibn Ezra. He's the Nesiei HaEgel. In other words, prior to the replacement of the Bukhar with the Levium, who would have been administering the bringing of Karbonos in general to anyone? You know, whether to Hashem or the Havdil, to the Egel Azav, to the Bukharim. So the son of the Bukharim were the ones who were bringing the Karbonos to the Egel Azav. Okay, Lachu Machtos. Varaya Alzeh Apirush, the proof that all of this is true. In other words, that the main complaint over here is the complaint of the Bukharim who feel that they were pushed out of power in favor of the Shavit Levi. There's no sense on that. The whole miracle with the staves, which is described later on in the Parsha, what's the whole point of that miracle with the staff? Is to show that Matzah Levi, that the staff of Levi flowers, to show that Levi was chosen by the Ribbono Shel Olam, not by Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was it necessary to show that Levi was chosen by Ribbono Shel Olam and not by Moshe Rabbeinu? Because that was exactly the complaint that the people had during the rebellion of Korach, that this is all, you know, from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not anything that was, you know, said by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hakein Kosev was the house who knows some, and that's why the miracle with the staff will finally get the Jewish people to stop complaining. He asked Luna al Zehoisa, because that was the complaint. Come on, my Moshe Rabbeinu. Come on, my Moshe. Kilomi would be. Moshe Rabbeinu also has to tell the people, I didn't make any of this up. I wish the Chosvu, Kimi Libo also. Because they suspected that he had made the whole thing up. Va'od, lo Hashem shkohani b'shlut ha-tazeh, ki kvar libo kol yisra. Right? So, va'od raya gmo ki chol ha-eidah kulam kidosh. Says Ibn Ezra, an interesting chat, when Korach comes before Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, chol ha-eidah kulam kidosh. The entire congregation is holy. What does he mean by that? Right? So, I think the way it's generally interpreted is that we're all equal, everybody's equal. You know, Korach was the first Democrat, lowercase d. Right? Everybody's equal. There's utter equality. Nobody's better than anybody else in Chal Yisrael. Says Ibn Ezra, a fascinating alternate interpretation, Zer remez v'bukhorim shem kidoshim. But it says, Kol ha'edah kulam kidoshim, it doesn't mean everybody is kadosh. It means that the Bukhorim, the firstborn, are kadosh. As it says, Kadosh v'kol Bukhor, right? Well, when the Jews are just leaving Egypt, are sanctified for me every Bukhor. So, how do you get that out of the Pasuk? Kol ha'edah kulam kidoshim. All the Bukhorim are kidoshim. V'heim ho'yu ha'kohanim ha'kidoshim ha'ashem v'heim ikar kol ha'edah. Says the Ibn Ezra, the Bukhorim are the most important people in the Eda, in the congregation. So therefore, when it says Kol HaEda, it doesn't really mean Kol HaEda the way we would interpret it, everybody. No, Kol HaEda Kulam Kedoshim means all of the Bukharim are Kedoshim. Umadua Kisnatsu Al Kahal Hashem. Why should you, Levian, raise yourself up over the Kahal, you know, the congregation of Hashem? Is a reference to essentially saying, why should you, Levian, make yourselves into leaders over the Bukharim? Right? A very, very different interpretation than I think the way we're used to interpreting it. Right? The Kisser says to Ibn Ezra, the complaint, the primary complaint of this various amalgam of groups that came to attack Moshe Rabbeinu, because they were upset at, in the aftermath of the Chet al Ego, that the Bukharim had been pushed to the side, that the Levim had been put into their place. There were other various secondary complaints which came in as well, but that was the primary complaint, and Parshas Korach happens immediately after that event, back, you know, immediately after the story with the Chet al Ego. The Ramban has a long discussion of this Ibn Ezra, and the Ramban is very disturbed by the notion that Parshas Korach, according to the Ibn Ezra, really chronologically takes place back at the end of Sefer Shmos. But writes the Ramban, Kvar kosavti ki al baiti kol ha-torah b'seder. I've written already, says the Ramban, that as a general rule, the Torah is in chronological order. And what do you mean as a general rule, the Torah is in chronological order? The Gemara says, in the beginning of the Masechta Sukkah, a very famous line, Ein muktam ma'uchad ba'Torah. There's no earlier and later in the Torah. In other words, the Gemara itself says, quoting proofs from the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, that, you know, there is, the Torah is not necessarily written in chronological order. So the Rabbi acknowledges that you can't get away from that, it's a Gemara. But says the Ramban, Zulosi, the Makom HaShiyu Koresh HaKosu HaKdom HaVo Icher. Yes, there are places where the Torah itself spells out that what it's presenting is not in chronological order. In the case of the Gemara Sokhan, the Gemara takes two passages which are dated, and the dates of the passages indicate that the passages are out of order. So when the Torah itself indicates that the passages are out of order, okay, so then we say, Ein muchtam ma'ukhar ba'Torah. You know, that there's no earlier or later in the Torah. Okay. But that's the exception rather than the rule. In other words, you know, lacking an indication to the contrary, says the Ramban, you should assume that the Torah is in chronological order. And Gam Shal L'Sarachim L'Tam L'Achar. And even when it's not in chronological order, it's for some good reason, right? That the Torah felt that another order would make some, you know, better sense than the chronological order. The Torah is not just written arbitrarily, says the Ramban, where you could just, you know, it's not just a puzzle, where you can kind of assume that, you know, this Pasha was said then, this Pasha was said then. You know, we should assume a Pasha's Korach is where it is. It took place chronologically after Pasha's Shlach.
Everything is in order.
Right.
There's no earlier and no later. What it's written is what it happens.
Right.
Not that it can be out of order.
Right, so, you know, if I was just interpreting that phrase of the Gemara in a vacuum, I mean, you're right, that actually is what it means, right. But again, if you look at the context of the Gemara over there, it's the beginning of Sukkot, it's very clear that the Gemara means that in the context of, you know, there's no chronological order in the Torah, right? And you're right, I mean, the literal translation, I think it fits in better with what you're saying, that there's no earlier or later in the Torah. But, you know, the Gemara means that in the sense there's no chronological order. Right, so that's the first thing the Ramban says. So Lechara, first of all, over here, you see a very fundamental machlokas between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra, apparently, disagrees with this Ramban. So the Ramban says, while it's true that we have this concept in the Gemara that the Torah isn't always in chronological order, that's the exception. As a rule of thumb, the Torah is in chronological order. In other words, you have to prove to me that something's not in chronological order. You know, my assumption going in, all things being equal, is that things are in chronological order. Apparently the Ibn Ezra disagrees. Apparently the Ibn Ezra understands that idea from the Gemara as a much more far-reaching idea. No, the Gemara is basically saying that, you know, really pay very little attention to chronology at all when interpreting the Torah. You really can't assume that the Torah is written in chronological order as a general rule. All right, so that's an important nekuda, first of all, number one over here. Then the Ramban goes on to argue the following point. Even if you were to grant the idea that the Torah isn't always in chronological order, it doesn't make sense in terms of the history to assume that the rebellion of Korach took place right after the Chet HaEgel. Why not? So he goes on to say, Hinei Yisrael b'yotzom v'nid Har Sinai, when the Jews were still encamped around Har Sinai, lo ira lahem shum ra'ah, nothing bad really befell them. Aye, the Chet HaEgel. Ki kam v'dvar ha'egel shahoyah ha'chet gogo v'forsom, ha'yu ha'mesim u'atim, in a relative sense, even with the Chet HaEgel, which really the Jews had only themselves to blame for what happened, the number of people who died were relatively few, you know, relative to Klal Yisrael as a whole. The Nitzol of the Tzilof of Shemoshe, Shnitznabil Aleim, Avoyim Yonga, Avoyim Laila. Indeed, you know, the Jews were saved because of Moshe's intervention on their behalf. The Yinei Hoyu O'adim Osom Kinaf Oso Kinashom, the Shomim Eilov, Moshe Rabbeinu's popularity in the polls at Har Sinai was at an unprecedented high. The Jewish people loved Moshe Rabbeinu at that juncture. Because after all, he had brought them the Torah, he had brought them all these things, you know, the Mon, you know, the air had happened already at that point. And, you know, even with the Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu's role was to protect the Jewish people. I mean, he had gone up and davened for them and saved them. The Ilu Hoya Odo Morev Al Moshe Bismanahu, Hoya Ha'om Sokhlin Osam, had anyone dared to lift a finger against Moshe Rabbeinu at that juncture in Jewish history, the rest of the people would have stoned him, says the Ramban. Right? V'lochein Sobal Korat Geduas Aaron, the Sobal Abukhari Mailus Halaviyah V'chomatav Shal Moshe. So even though, you're right, the Bukharim were probably disgruntled, you know, because they had been pushed out of a place of prominence. And even though Korach was probably disgruntled already back then, because he was passed over among the Levim in favor of Aaron and Moshe and that family, they stifled their disenchantment because it was not politically savvy to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu at that point in time. The Ibn Ezra actually says that as well, and knows what they were, but only because they thought Moshe had gone. Right, in other words, you know, Moshe's gone, okay, we need somebody else, but now that Moshe's back, you know, they never rebel against Moshe, I think. You know, they were looking to replace him because they thought he was gone. Right? So says the Ramban, even if we grant the idea that the Torah isn't necessarily in chronological order, I have a problem with this Ibn Ezra from a different perspective. It just doesn't make sense that Klal Yisrael would have rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu at that juncture in time because of the incredible popularity he enjoyed. Let me just finish before, and we'll take a question. Aval, the Vaal Amidbar Parah. But by the time you get to Sefer Bamidbar, and they come to the desert of Paran, what happens? A fire breaks out, and they die with Kibrot HaTaiva, and by the Miraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu is not successful in undoing the Gzeira, right? In other words, the people are doomed to wander in the desert for 40 years. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, we can argue Moshe Rabbeinu might have been successful in partially getting rid of the Gzeira, but clearly, you know, that wasn't the position of that wasn't the perspective of the average person on the street. So now, all of a sudden, Moshe Rabbeinu can't deliver. So his popularity in the polls starts sinking. His popularity in the polls starts sinking. So all of these guys who couldn't open their mouths at an earlier point in history all of a sudden come out of the woodwork and start ganging up against Moshe Rabbeinu. Since I'm done, it's just more plausible to assume that Korach takes place after the perceived quote-unquote failures of Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, he's not able to protect the Jewish people to the extent to which the Jewish people would like him to protect them, right? It's only after then that it makes sense that the people should start rebelling. Okay.
Now, I was just first of all, what do you
But it was clear after the Chet HaEgel that, again, that's the way that Ibn Ezra understands, and really the Rambam understands as well, that the Levim were selected to replace the Bukhar when the time would come. So maybe it hadn't been put into practice yet. Right?
So if you want to look at it from that perspective, it has to be current after, sometimes after the second year. You think that the Ravaram occurred very early in the second year. So therefore, Korach had a contest sometime in the second year, not prior to that. And also, we said all along that Korach was put there because of the Lashon Hara aspect from the previous
question. Well, that's the. That's the tie between the end of Halos and the beginning of Shlach. And as Miriam speaks against Moshe Rabbeinu, and Kalito speak against Eretz Yisrael.
Well, and then Korach is that you can't say bad things about Eretz Yisrael.
Right, but you're pointing out the thematic connection between Shlach and Korach. The Rambam is saying this. You don't have to look for a thematic connection, but a chronological connection. In other words, the reason Korach is after Shlach is because Korach happened after Shlach. I mean, that's the simplest reason as to why Korach is after Shlach. That's in chronological order. By the way, the Rambam does not dispute the basic idea that the Ibn Ezra has about the causes for the rebellion of Korach. Right? He goes on to say that HaKorov ki hayu elu hanikolim kulam v'choros ki alkein chorol hem ala kahuna. All of the people who joined the ranks of Korach were presumably, says the Rambam, Bechorim, because they were the ones who had bones to pick with the selection of the Kohanim / Levim instead of the Bechorim. In other words, the reasoning for the rebellion, says the Rambam, is the same thing that Ibn Ezra says. But the Rambam argues that you can't say the rebellion happened back at the time of the Chet HaEgel. A, the Torah is written chronologically. B, it's not nostalgia that the Jewish people would have rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu right after the Chet HaEgel because his popularity was on an all-time high. So I wanted to just take a minute or two, you see it's a very fundamental machlokas about the whole way you read Chumash. You know, to what extent does chronology play a role in our interpretation of Chumash? According to the Ramban, a lot. According to the Ibn Ezra, not so much. But I want to take a moment just to try to understand the Ibn Ezra's perspective against the Ramban. So, one thing that Ibn Ezra doesn't tell us is the following. Let's grant that the Parshas Korach really doesn't belong here in the Chumash. Really, chronologically, it belongs back in Parshas Kisifa, or sometime around then. So, then why did the Torah put in Parshas Korach? You know, why? In other words, it doesn't seem like the Torah should arbitrarily write things out of order. Right? Things, generally speaking, should have some kind of order to them, even if you tell me that we can be loose with the chronology. But, you know, there has to be a reason why we would ignore the chronology. Why would Parshas Korach be here if the events in Parshas Korach took place back in Parshas Kisisa? The commentary to the new Oz V'Hadar Chumashim on Ibn Ezra suggests the following. If you look at the end of Parshas Shlach, the Maisa with the Mekoshesh. So the Maisa with the Mekoshesh is introduced with the following words: "Vayiyu b'nei Yisrael b'amidbar." The Jewish people were in the desert. "Vayimsu ish Mekoshesh eitzav yom haShabbos." Which desert were they in? Parshas Ibn Ezra, they were midbar Sinai. In other words, the story with the Mekoshesh is also out of order. The story with the Mekoshesh really took place back in Shmos. Right. Right. So in other words, and this Lechora, the answer without telling us though, is really reflecting what Chazal say. And Chazal say that Klal Yisrael were incapable of keeping a single shot, you know, the two Shabbos in a row. So in other words, this is the Maisa with the Mekoshesh goes back, you know, to basically Matan Torah, you know, by you bringing yourself on Midbar. So says the commentary on the Oz V'Hadar, so if the Mekoshesh is really taking place at Har Sinai, so then Korach also is taking place at Har Sinai. Okay, but that just kicks the can a little bit down the road. So if the Mekoshesh is taking place at Har Sinai, so then why is the story with the Mekoshesh related in Parashat Shvat as opposed to being related back sometime in Sefer Shmos? So here the Ibn Ezra does provide an explanation. He says that Ibn Ezra, right before the story with the Mekoshesh, we learn about the various karbonos that are brought to somebody who violates Torah, the Yad Rama. Yad Rama doesn't mean that he passes like the Rama against the Mechaber. It means that the person, in a very rebellious kind of fashion, rebels and strikes out, you know, against the Rabbanu Shel Olam and his Torah. The Mekoshesh, according to the Ibn Ezra, desecrated Shabbos beyond Rama. Here he's not like Chazal, who identify, or at least one strain within Chazal who identified the Mekoshesh as Tzlofcha, who's Mekabin the Shem Shabbat. Not the Mekoshesh was a Mechal Shabbos, who was a terrible person. Right? So we talk about the Karbanos that are brought to somebody who sins beyond Rama. So too, the Mekoshesh acted beyond Rama. If you work with that approach, so then the connection to Korach is a beautiful connection. Because Korach also rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu beyond Rama. They had a tremendous chutzpah to speak out against Moshe Rabbeinu to challenge his leadership. So in other words, although these parshios chronologically belong back in Sefer Shmos, thematically, they all reflect the idea of a brazen rebellion, and as such, they should be together because they're reflecting that theme, even if the chronology is off. Yeah. Right, okay. But again, I think that Yisod of Yon Roma, according to the Ibn Ezra, you know, that you can act so brazenly, you know, that's what's bothering. What's that? Was against God. God, against the Shabbos. I mean, you know, the Shabbos is one of the cornerstones of Yiddishkeit. Let's just take it one step further. So, the Rambam had claimed that it's very hard to imagine that the Korach rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu immediately after the Chetah Egel, because who would be so brazen as to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu at that point in time? You know, you have to be out of your mind. The people would stone you, right? What's that? Megadeth, okay, still a little bit later than Megadeth, right? But the truth is, if we're understanding the Ibn Ezra correctly, that the whole Yisod of Parshas Korach is not just a rebellion, but a rebellion beyond Rama, so in a sense that answers the Ramban's question. The Ramban says, could it be that somebody would be so brazen to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu at the height of his popularity? The answer is yes, according to the Ibn Ezra. According to the Ibn Ezra, yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Korach Vazoso are the epitome of rebellion beyond Rama. You know, rebellion that knows no boundaries, that's, you know, ready to strike out, not only, you know, when they think the time is right, you know, like the Ramban. According to the Ramban, Karfaz also, they're lying in wait, you know, waiting for the right moment where there's a chink in the armor of Moshe Rabbeinu and they can strike. According to the Ibn Ezra, no, they have no such pretensions. They'll strike whenever they want to strike, because that's the yisod of the Yad Rama, of being brazen, that they don't care, you know, they're ready to start up with Moshe Rabbeinu, even at the height of his popularity. So in a sense, one question answers the other from the perspective of the Ibn Ezra. Right, so that's a whole different thing. That's why Korach thought he could get away with it. Right? But, again, I don't know that Ibn Ezra is going with that medrash, but it's just, you know, there's some people, you know, sit on the Kalkelis of Hashura. They just hate so much, they'll do something which is even counterproductive from their perspective because they want to strike. Okay, next week, Ezra Hashem, we'll have the Shiur Monday night, just to keep everybody guessing. So we'll look forward to that.